Old Rail 4. We're talking about your seamanship training as an ordinary seaman aboard at HMS Ganges.
Well, you are aboard, really. You are aboard, really.
And we're talking, what about going through various parts of seamanship training? Right. Did you find something like boxing the compass? Did you see the point of it in the modern Navy? You know, this is going around the compass clock. And how far did you go? Because they used to go right down to the very small gradations.
Yes, you have to go down to north, northeast, northeast by north, and you have to box it just like that. All the way around for 360 degrees. And it is useful. I found that when you are on board a ship, although you're using a compass in front of you and you're reading it from that compass, you do know what you're talking about then.
Would they just take you one way? Because one of the old tricks of instructors was to start you going one way and then make you go back and move you about.
It wasn't as difficult as that. All you had to do was box it the correct way round, or you would probably say, well, what comes after southwest? Or what comes before southwest?
But not deliberately.
Not deliberately try and trick you. No.
What about knots and splices, and how relevant were they?
They were very relevant. We learnt those normally in the classroom from aboard first of all, so that you know which is the reef knot, which is the granny knot, which is the bowline on the bight, and all that. And you also did all the splices indoors.
Could you explain for them what the difference is between knots and splices? Because people don't know now.
No. Fair enough. Knots is always for joining, nearly always for joining two pieces of rope together. Or if it's something like a bowline, it's used for going round a person or round an object to safely pull them aboard or anything like that.
Without tightening and
crimping. Without tightening, that's right. But a splice is nearly always a case of... knots were to join something temporarily, I suppose. A splice is when you can join two pieces of rope together on a permanent feature. It's not easy to come undone. A knot, if it joins two pieces of rope, you can undo it again after, so it's only a temporary fixing.
So how would you do a splice? Was this for cables as well, or just for
yes,
knots?
You can do it with wire. There's a marlin spike is usually used with wire cables, but it's much more difficult because obviously wire. But a rope is really a case of if you're joining two ends of rope, splicing it, then there's different ropes which makes it more complicated. But you unwind the three or five strands at each end of the rope, and they're entwined then, and then rebuilt into the opposite one, so you have just a larger piece of the width of the rope, but it's really joined and it's a permanent feature. That is an easy way of doing it. You've got things like back splicing and different things, but you know, knots and splices is a whole more or less trade of its own. It's a lot in it, but it's very interesting.
Actually. You found it interesting?
I found it very interesting.
What about the practical side of seamanship and small boats, either sailing? I don't know whether they did actually sailing, but rowing cutters, yeah. I think you had to do.
We used to do rowing and sailing, and that was carried out on the river. I think it's the River Orwell or something it goes. I'm not really sure, no. But we'd go out onto the river with about four or five cutters, proper naval cutters. And at one time, we would probably row them. If the weather was right, you would then set sail and sail them. But you didn't spend a lot of time doing that. It looked upon more or less of enjoying yourself.
How did you take to rowing? I mean,
very well, because I used to do it. I used to go up to Hyde Park and row on the Serpentine, so I loved it.
Was it much different? Was there a naval method of rowing? Or
there is a naval method of rowing, because when you're rowing on yourself, like for pleasure, normally it's just one of you. Of course, in a cutter, there's four of you or five of you.
So do you just have one oar? Or?
No, you have two oars normally, but you've got to know how to feather your oar, which is bringing the flat blade so that it cuts through the water when you're pushing it back to the position to pull again. the blade being like a spoon, if you think of a spoon, right, then to pull it through the water, then of course you want the spoon end pulling the water. But then when you want to take it back, you don't put it through the water, you try and do it so it's just above the water. But you do it easier by feathering your oar, which means you turn your spoon horizontally. So if you do accidentally hit the water, it doesn't, what they call, catch a fish.
And did it mess your hands up, or were they tough enough?
I think they were tough enough. You didn't do that amount of rowing, really.
What about sailing? I mean, it's not that easy to sail a cutter, I believe. Or did you find it so?
Well, the truth of the matter is they didn't have time to teach you the real sailing of cutters. You were just told that it was possible and you went out for a sail, but you never really learnt the real sailing.
So you didn't sail it? A petty officer or a leading seaman was sailing it?
Really, I think so. Because I have sailed since and I can't recall being told very much about the sailing. It was really just part of your training of learning everything. So if you were ever in sea and cast off when you were in a whaler, you had a little bit of an idea on what to do if you could sail it.
Any other parts of seamanship? I'll come to gunnery and torpedoes. Right. Anything else about the sea, you know, and being a seaman that you had to learn? You had a seamanship manual, didn't you?
I mean, we did. I wish I had one now. I can't get hold of one. But
would you have to learn that, or was it just something?
You had to know a lot what was in it. Some of the things you had to learn was like ships passing, port to port, port to port, starboard to starboard, but not port to starboard, so you can have an accident. It's all and the lights. You learnt also about lights. Ships have a red light and a white light, a red light and a green light, and the red is port, the green is starboard, and it was always red to red, go ahead, because then they're passing safely. These are some of the things you learn.
So the rules of the sea.
The rules of the sea, yeah. Well,
and this would be lectures, I presume, you'd learn.
Yes, you'd learn this at lectures, and some of the other things you learn were about rigging. How the rigging of ships, sometimes old ships, out of interest, but the modern ships, how they were rigged. And when you came to sailing, you were taught the different rigs of sailing boats, out of interest. I think more out of interest than what you'd have. Then you'd learn about modern ships, perhaps, where you'd have motorboats and cutters on some, and whalers and different types of things. A lot of it which you can't remember, you know.
What about ship identification? Was that part of, you know, so that you could spot the Sharn, or was that not, or aircraft identification?
Well, the aircraft identification really came into the beginnings of gunnery.
Well, let's go on to gunnery,
yeah,
then.
But with the identification, you would go into a room one day where they've got an horizon with some ships on it, and they'd say, well, these are cruisers, these are destroyers, and things like that. And aircraft to a certain degree. But the more important thing that I can remember is they'd take you in a darkened room, because a lot of your work would be on lookout at night, which I found was the case. And in this darkened room, they said you have to have a quarter of an hour before your eyes will get used to the darkness. So straight away, you'll never see anything on the horizon until you've been wherever you are a quarter of an hour. And they would then set up something with aircraft or with ships mostly on the horizon, and they'd not so much say whether that's a cruiser, they'd just say, what can you see? And this is where boxing the compass would come in useful, because you would say, Oh, I can see a small ship southeast. And they say, well, how much southeast? They say, well, 45 degrees and things like this. And they'd also say to you, well, you also find that if you're looking ahead, you can see more in the darkness out the corner of your eye, which I found was true. You could see something, if there's nothing in front of you, and you're looking ahead, you could still notice something which is on the corners of your eye. That is, I think aircraft recognition didn't really come so much into it. You had a certain amount of it. But you also learned signals as well, flags.
What signals?
Different types of flags. Although you were not a signal and you weren't going to learn signalling, you were taught certain flags.
What sort of thing?
Well, I think that a message could be given by a flag more than anything else. And if there's, I think what we didn't learn, but I've learned, says a black flag is put up if they sight a U-boat and are going to attack. Different things like that, which I can't remember.
Now, what about your gunnery training? What was that?
The gunnery, they've got a gunnery department round there. That mostly, I think they're old guns from the First World War. They're large, 6-inch, and this is where you learn a lot of discipline, because you took turns on whether you were captain of the gun or the trainer or the aimer or anything like that. And you had to put a shell in and release it and all that sort of thing. And the main thing they taught you was that when the person in charge finds how it's gone wrong, he will command still. And even if you're standing on one leg, you stand on one leg till he gives the okay to carry on. And that is one of the disciplines, I think, that I remembered all the way through the Navy. You did exactly what you told, and that was quite interesting as well.
That could be quite hard if you were holding the shell.
It can be quite hard, yeah, because our shells on board were 4.5s. That is about the heaviest shell I suppose, because the 6-inch shell was always brought up by hoist, I think. I'm not sure, but...
What about the torpedo training?
Torpedo training.
And that normally goes with depth charges, I think, doesn't it?
Or yeah, but the gunnery also, besides on the guns itself, you go into another room where you've got all the different identification marks of shells. And all the shells were coloured with different bands. So you've got a star shell that's got one colour, you've got a semi-armour piercing, and so it goes on. I couldn't remember them, but you learned all this.
You knew them then.
You knew them then, and this is how much you had to learn. And when you come round to the torpedoes, you learned a little bit about depth charges, but not a lot, because you went, if you were going to specialise in that, of course you became a seaman torpedoman anyway. Which I wasn't, I become something else. But they taught you about the torpedo, the different types of torpedo, and there's an 18-inch torpedo, and there's a 21-inch torpedo, and how the compass on it worked, and how it's pressurised, how it didn't stop, if it was fired from the tube, then it didn't really start till it hit the water, and it started spinning, you know, the engines and things. So, but I found it very, very interesting.
Anything else from your training? Did they still send you over the masthead?
Ah, yes.
And did you do it?
No. I did the attempt, but I've always been afraid of heights. They've always scared me. So they said, right, you've got as much time as you like, but you don't go on leave. Until you pass three different things, three different exams, more or less. And one of them is climbing a mast. And, of course, you have to climb up the ratlines, and go round what they call the devil's elbow, up the next lot of rat lines, over the top, down again, out round the elbow. Now, well, I got up as far as the devil's elbow, but nowhere could I get out over that devil's elbow.
This is where you climb out.
Yeah.
With your back to the drop.
Yeah. You climb out, and of course then your feet are dangling, and you've got to reach over the top to get the next one. And I'm told by people coming down, it's even worse if you manage to get through that part, because when you're coming down, you're hanging by your hands. You've got to find where to put your feet, haven't you? I wasn't looking forward to that at all. And yet there's wrens by the side of me running up these rat lines, going over the top and coming down the other end. So anyway, I kept trying this for the required number of weeks.
You always froze then?
Well, I never got to the stage when I froze, because I knew I'd freeze.
So what I mean, you just stopped. How high would you get up? I mean,
up to the devil's elbow.
How high would that be about?
Well, the devil's elbow must be up to the height of that roof, top roof of the chimneys of that house.
So pretty high.
It's pretty high, yeah. It's quite a distance.
30 or 40 feet, anyway.
I would imagine so. It is quite a distance to go up.
Did you feel about this? Because it was a failure one way. Yeah. Frightened of heights, you're frightened of heights. Yeah. How did you feel about it? Did you feel bad about it? Or?
Not really. I just felt I couldn't do it, and that's all there is to it, you know. And
did your colleagues... Did your fellow recruits, did they take the mickey a bit? Or?
Oh no, nobody, because it was a recognised thing that everybody should do it. And although they said you don't go on leave till you do, in the end of course you did, because they know you could. I mean, they've had so many accidents over the years of people falling off, you know, that they know that they can't push everybody to do it. They try to.
What proportion of people wouldn't be able to do it? I mean, were there some others in your year?
Oh, yeah, there would be others that wouldn't be able to do it. I wasn't the only one. And, of course, there were others that got away with it anyway and didn't even climb the mast, I've heard since. How, I don't know. But when the day came and the officers were there with their pads and checking that you do the job properly, all I did was climb up through what they call the lubber's hole, which goes between the rat lines, which goes between the elbow, the devil's elbow, and comes back down through the devil's elbow. I did just that, and nobody said a word. I've no doubt they put it on my, whatever it was, and it would probably mean that I would never have got the job as lookout on the mast of a ship, which people did.
But that would be just as well.
I'd be quite happy about that, you see. So I did it, and in the end I thought, well, I haven't done it. That's just what there was to it. But there's three tests you had to go through.
What were the other tests?
Another one was that you had to swim. They had a wonderful swimming pool there.
Now, could you swim before you went in?
Yes, luckily I could swim like a fish. So I had no problem.
What was the test? Do you remember how?
Well, the longest, it's 50 yards on the long length and 25 yards on the width. Well, on the long length, you had to swim that and back, and you do that with no clothes at all on, completely starkers. And the width, you had to swim with a uniform on, which is just a pair of trousers and the sailor's jacket. And if you did that, you passed the test.
And so this was no problem to you?
No problem to me, fortunately. There were many I saw there that, because you had to go there and learn to swim, whether you liked it or not. And they used to dunk you under with a great big long pole if you didn't do it. So there was quite a few that got dragged out and resuscitated. So that was two of the tests.
What was the third one?
The third one was in a gymnasium. Now, perhaps if you've seen some of these shows where they climb the mast, the other thing was they have a swinging lattice from the roof like a square waffle cake or whatever it is, you know, with and hanging from that is a rope from each one of those divisions, and you line up by the rope. There's about four ropes, and you climb up the rope. When you get to the lattice, you climb through one and round and out and through the other till you get to the top, and then come back down and come down by the rope. Well, fortunately, I was quite athletic and managed to do that as well. But I do know the chap next to me, when he climbed up to the top of the rope, you couldn't get through, and there was a thump as he fell down and hit the floor, and they ran out with a stretcher. They had to stand there waiting for him each time. I knew somebody would. They carted him off to the the sick bay. So, but I've managed to get through those. Once you get through those, then you can go on night leave to Harwich, I think, or Ipswich.
What were nights out in Harwich or Ipswich like?
Well, there were, the only place that was worth going to was going to Harwich or Ipswich. There was nowhere else round Shotley there, because it's, I don't know whether you've ever been there, but it's really sparse. It's worse than this part of the world even. But yes, you go across to Harwich and...
What would you do there?
Not a lot, really. As in most of these places, you either just walk around sightseeing or go for a drink at one of the pubs or go for something to eat, because everybody will tell you the food outside is better than naval food, but that's not always the case, to be quite honest. And that's all. But
how much would you drink yourself by then?
In those days, at the most, I'd drink 2 pints.
So just a social drink with your friends?
Really, I've never found it. I like to have a drink, social drink, but I've never found it's that much of a benefit. It's not a wonderful drink, unless you want to drown your sorrows, perhaps. Yeah.
And would you go to the pictures, or...?
Possibly, but very often you wouldn't have much time. By the time you've just walked round and perhaps had a drink, it's time to catch the Liberty boat back.
Would many of you spend time chasing the girls, or...?
Well, I think it depends on the type of person you are. You always found one. All his life he'd be chasing the girls and bragging on how many he's chased. But normally, if you met up with some girls, yeah, you'd chat them and try and, you know, get friendly with them. But normally, if it's a place like Harwich, Chatham, you've got no chance. The civilian would be better than they would. The only place you stood a chance is places like Ayr, where I was before, where, you know, you were accepted as a matlow, a sailor.
Now, how did you get on with your fellow recruits?
Quite good, I think.
You said you normally do. I mean,
yeah, quite good. I can't remember any problems there. I can never remember who I might have gone ashore with or anything like that. But
did you have any special pals, or do you not?
I don't think so. My special pals really came when I came on a ship, usually in training. For some reason, I'm not sure why. You accepted the fact that you were only there for a certain amount of time and then you went elsewhere, you know.
What about the instructors? I mean, it was a much stricter place. How did the instructors behave towards you?
Well, although they were very strict, they put that strictness over with the feeling that if you were doing as they tell you to, you were their best friend. You know, it's only the few that just wouldn't toe the line, I think. I mean, a lot of them acted just like uncles to you, like a Dutch uncle, you know, they were friendly to you, and I suppose if you were one of those that were a bit worried about being away from home, I should imagine they would be quite a good person, even though they were strict.
So they were very fair, from the
sense? I think they were very fair. I've met a few people in the Navy of the, you know, the upper class, we might call them, that I have not liked. I'll probably get onto that when we get to the Carron. But most of them in training until you got down to Chatham Barracks.
Now, anything else about... You were there for about three or four months, from April 44 to July 44.
Yeah, that's right.
Anything else about your time, or is that it? It's quite an intensive course.
It is quite an intensive course. You learn such a lot of varying things, but it was all interesting, I found. There's not a lot more I can remember now. I should probably have to I'll probably remember a lot more when I've finished, yeah. But
so what was your next point? I think it was to the Valkyrie, which is
Valkyrie, that, yeah. That's radar training. That's the Isle of Man.
That's Douglas, I believe.
Douglas, that's right, yeah, Douglas, the Isle of Man.
Why were you assigned to that? Well, did you volunteer for it, or were you just guided to it? Because you'd been in communications before,
right.
Radars a little bit related.
That's right. Well, when we finished or getting to the end of the Able Seaman's course, they would say, well, do you want to stay just as... Well, it's an ordinary seaman, not able seaman, not the admin to say. The seamanship course. You were then asked, do you want to stay as a seaman, or would you like to do a subgrade? A torpedoman or anything like that. And one of the in things then, one of the new things, of course, was radar. And although we learnt a lot about the explosives for the gunnery course, I'm never that happy with explosives anyway. I've still got all my hands and feet, and that's what I'm happy about. So radar seemed to be an interesting thing after doing the electrics of communication.
So you went there in July of 44, roughly speaking, and you were an able seaman by then, according to this.
Yeah.
What do you remember? You were there about a month.
Right.
Now, what was the course like?
Well, the course, again, was I think, quite interesting. Being such a lovely place, like air, made it more difficult. And the sun shone nearly every day, I think, while I was there. But we were billeted in hotels, which were taken over by the Admiralty on the seafront. So it was quite nice.
Was it still set up as hotels, or were the rooms cleared and you were on the floor?
I quite honestly can't remember a lot about that. We must have been in bunks, I think, of some sort. And all across the front of the hotels was barbed wire to contain us in or the others out, I'm not sure which. And I think we marched down the road to somewhere else for breakfast and dinner and different things like that instead of having it at the hotel. And then we were marched from there quite a distance across a wooden bridge where we had the brake step in case we broke the bridge, and then up the hill to Douglas Head. And Douglas Head, they've got the station. I've been there since we went to a reunion a few years ago, actually, but I think it's all gone completely now. And we were in classrooms there because there was two types of radar rating. There's the radar control, which I was a branch, and there's a radar plot, which was the other branch of radar. So you did, some of your training was on the same sets, because as a radar rating you're supposed to be able to do both, but you were still taught a little bit more on one than the other.
Now, what set were you using or being trained on, and how did it all work?
Well, I think it's difficult to remember numbers, but I think it was the 273. Now that is a warning radar. And it is three units. Is one unit where you've got the like the round radar set configuration, where like a telly but it's round, and you've got the arm going around all the time, which highlights anything that you have. So it's an all-round view of the ship or the site. And it shows up anything at all that is metallic normally or that type. And you would then read that off with the bearing of it. So a Northy bearing 230 or whatever it is like that. And you also got the distance, which you take from the centre to that, which will give you that distance.
Were you still having to turn the aerial by hand?
No, that had gone. It was all done by motor then. But you also had another little set, I think, was by the side, which gives you the an extra reading, which is like grass, where it goes up and down, which also gives you another reading, especially if it's aircraft, because it will then give you the height of the aircraft, which you wouldn't get on the PPI, the round radar.
And this is all part of the 273 radar set?
This is all part of it.